Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Rodney Bent. Rodney's on the professional staff of the House Appropriations Committee. And joining us in our conversation is Jonathan Brule. Well, Rodney, in this segment, I'd like to talk about doing business in Iraq. Perhaps you could begin by telling us more about the political and social and economic context in the country. What were your observations about the people of Iraq in terms of their sense of history and the social cohesion?
I guess the starting point for Iraq is really the fall of the Ottoman Empire in World War I. And out of that wreckage, the British, particularly for the history buffs, Gertrude Bell, created an Iraq that previously was probably several parts. I mean, one would be Kurdistan, the third would be the Arab Sunni middle, if you will, and then there would be the Shia South. Iraq has a huge history. I mean, you go back to Mesopotamia and Babylon, so it's got 5,000 years worth of history, but really only for the last 80 or 90 years as the country of Iraq. And so there are a lot of disparate groups. I mean, you categorize yourself by religion, by tribe, by ethnicity, by family, by clan, by whether you're educated or not educated, rural, urban. There are just lots and lots of different ways of classifying yourself. I was struck in some ways by how rigid is not the wrong word, but maybe class-conscious Iraqis were. Everybody knew sort of where you fit, that there wasn't the kind of there was sort of a long history to families. And so people would say, oh, he comes from a good family. And the upper tiers of the Iraqi society are really both very well educated, and everybody knows everybody. So, for example, the deputy minister of the Ministry of Planning had a wife who worked as the director general of the Ministry of Finance, and everybody tended to be friends, to have gone to school with the other people. And so there was kind of, on the one hand, a whole series of divisions, and on the other hand, a kind of a cohesiveness. And it made for some strange interrelations.
Rodney, can you give us a sense of the state of the economy in Iraq before Operation Iraqi Freedom, and then what it was like when you were there?
The Saddam economy was essentially a disaster. The state ran everything. It was in a state of decay and decrepitude, relied essentially on the oil for food program to feed people. If you drive down or go through Baghdad, even the nicer sections have a kind of a shabbiness I was just frankly struck by how run down and decrepit and used everything seemed. The cars were all 10, 15 years old, battered, missing headlights, bumpers ripped off. It was a huge contrast to go to another Arab country, say Jordan and Amman or Abu Dhabi, and see essentially a complete contrast with new cars, new buildings, paved streets, functioning electricity, everything. I think that Saddam, obviously, and his coterie of folks didn't suffer from any of this, but you really felt the plight of everyday Iraqis.
And was it changing after Saddam, or how?
I think that just huge changes that you could see. I mean, there were probably a million additional cars on the street by the time I left. In fact, when I arrived in late October, you could drive through downtown Baghdad without too much trouble. I mean, the streets are broad, but there wasn't a lot of traffic. By the time I left, people were complaining about the traffic. It would take an hour to get somewhere. Everything was gridlocked. You could see on some of the shopping districts just stacks of warehouse goods, refrigerators, air conditioners, TVs, satellites. There was an explosion in satellite TV, and you just felt like this society had opened up in some way from going from the closed Saddam period where, you couldn't own, nobody had satellite TVs, to a period where it seemed like every family who could afford one was out buying one.
Well, what are the types of challenges people like yourself face when you're working in Iraq on a day-to-day basis?
Huge. One challenge is communications. I talked about the cell phones, but that meant it was very difficult to get a hold of people. And Iraq, essentially it was frozen in time. There was a Rip Van Winkle quality to, you know, pre-1991 and post-1991. So that, for example, in the medical schools, the journals stop in 1990, 1991. There are no recent journals. People were not used to the computer. In fact, when I went to the Board of Supreme Audit, which was kind of a combination GAO and auditing firm, we talked about their use of computers in auditing processes, and they said, well, yes, of course we use computers. Let's show you the computer center. Well, you go, well, there are no computers in the computer center. What they meant by computers was essentially doing spreadsheets and very basic work as opposed to what we might think of in terms of auditing. Danger was clearly the second thing. Every time you strapped on your flak jacket and put on a helmet and drove out of the green zone, you were always a little bit nervous about, well, what might happen. Day before I left, in fact, one of my staff came in and very apologetically said, well, he's sorry, but he'd wrecked the car. And, you know, I felt a little bit like, okay, I'm the dad and teenage son has come back. And, well, it turned out he'd been shot at by somebody driving a pickup truck with an AK, and he had just riddled the car with bullets, and it was just a miracle that the staffer wasn't injured or killed. And I mean, that, you know, one of my translators was blown up in a bomb on January 18th. You know, that gives a different perspective on things.
Let's talk about the project implementation stage of the resources that were allocated for the reconstruction of Iraq. Can you describe the types of projects that the Defense Department, the State Department, and the U.S. Agency for International Development are implementing?
Sure. The broadly speaking, the Defense Department was doing two areas. One area was clearly security, training the Iraqi armed forces, training the ancillary groups, the Iraqi Civil Defense Corps, the border enforcement. They were also, through the project management office, handling a lot of the reconstruction of Iraq itself. The Army Corps of Engineers was heavily involved, so power plants, dams, irrigation, railroad, roads. Defense was involved in all of these things. The State Department was working on training police, on some of the democracy programs. AID was doing some of the reconstruction along with defense on electricity. But they were also doing health, education, some other governance issues, trying to help the Iraqis establish what we would call civil society.
The reconstruction has relied on a lot of private contractors, and that's not without controversy in terms of pluses and minuses. I'd be curious sort of your perspective and some lesson learned on the use of contractors in this environment.
One issue is using contractors to do what we'd call inherently governmental services, and, you know, whether you talk about the tragedy at Abu Ghraib or clearly there's been, that's just horrible abuses. But really, contractors bring you a lot of things that you wouldn't otherwise get. I mean, there are not many people in the U.S. government that have sat around building power plants or looking at dams or being civil engineers. You get some, but they don't generally, they oversee, they don't generally do. And so private contractors were essential. I think is a little bit different when you talk about policing or some of the other things where there's clearly a gray area and in terms of what gets defined, who does what.
There's a sense at one perspective that an awful lot of money is being spent on contractors, and gee, you know, people are taking advantage of the system. There's also a sense that, gee, this is a very high risk, this is a very risky place, as you've indicated.
Yeah.
It probably does cost more to get people motivated.
Yeah.
As the budget guy, how did you work that equation?
Well, it was an increasing part of the equation as we were ending. I was listening to, I think it was Mr. Waxman talking about trucks in Iraq and saying, well, people didn't have, they would abandon an $85,000 truck because they didn't have a flat tire. And I don't know this to be the case, but I was speculating in my mind, well, anybody who's driven on a highway in Iraq knows that you're not going to pull over and change a flat. I mean, that's a sure way of getting killed. And so, you know, on the one hand, it points out the risks of working in Iraq and just the extraordinary extra cost for security that you have to pay. On the other hand, you can sort of say, well, heck, why are we doing that? If it's going to cost, you know, for lack of a spare tire, we're going to lose an $85,000 truck. Should we be doing that?
And how about the personal benefits when you see people interviewed now in the media? I mean, they do cite sort of, you know, sort of a Peace Corps kind of this, I should be there, I should go and help these people.
I think that I never knew anybody over there who was in it for the money, and maybe truck drivers for Halliburton or whatever, but by and large, the folks at CPA were a pretty high-minded lot. I mean, everybody went over there with a sense of purpose, with a kind of desire to help and to in any way you could. I think that it was kind of interesting and contrasting sort of my experience at OMB with being over there. Both cases, you have talented staff, you have people who are motivated, but there was much more out there in CPA. There was a kind of a camaraderie. We're all in this together. Whatever people felt about the war, and there were a range of people who, from people who actively didn't support the war to people who were fervent believers, but that was essentially irrelevant. The war was, as far as I was concerned, was over and done with. We had to do what we could to help the Iraqi society.
It's a fascinating point about the different perspectives on the war. What type of management flexibilities are needed to manage funds in an ever-changing environment? We'll ask Rodney Bent to tell us what he saw during his time in Iraq when the Business of Government Hour returns.